الله أكبر الله أكبر لا
Greetings to you, sisters and brothers. This is Steve Muhammad coming to you from Refuge Depot. As we all know, the weather is extreme. We need to prepare our homes to become a sanctuary and not a cemetery. Please go to refugedepot.com or click in the description below to find all your disaster preparedness items and survival techniques. That's refugedepot.com. Or click in the description below. If you have any questions, please call 937-985-0779 or email refugedepot@gmail.com.
Are you tired of corporate-controlled media? Then it's time to subscribe to a new way of gaining access to independent and timely news coverage. Introducing the Final Call Digital Edition. The Final Call Digital Edition is on the cutting edge of print news delivery. The Final Call Digital Edition carries in-depth reporting and thought-provoking analysis of both national and international news. Get out of the old and get into the new. Subscribe to Final Call Digital Edition at digital.finalcall.com.
The all-new Final Call Radio. Streaming messages and music from the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. Worldwide. 24 hours a day. 7 days a week. Download the Final Call Radio app and take us everywhere. On your phone. On your computer. On your tablet. On Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. You can also log on to finalcall.com and click the Listen Live button. Or finalcallradio.com. Final Call. Final Call Radio. The official voice of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan and the Nation of Islam.
Assalamu alaikum. I am your brother, Darnell Muhammad, a student in the ministry class under the divine guidance of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, the one God to whom all praise is due, we thank this one God for his many mercies and blessings. We thank this one God for his most merciful intervention in the affairs of humanity when humanity has strayed from the right path. We thank this one God for Musa and or Moses and the Torah. We thank this one God for Isa and or Jesus and the gospel. We thank this one God for Muhammad and the revelation of the Holy Quran. May Allah's peace and mercy be upon these worthy servants of his. However, I would be remiss in my duty as a black man in America if I did not thank this same one true God for his consistency, his constancy, and doing something that he had never done before. Even though he intervened in the affairs of others throughout our history in the prophecies, he did not send a prophet for us. He did not send an apostle for us, but God gave the greatest demonstration of love that has ever been exposed or demonstrated on our planet. He came himself in the person of one master, Far Muhammad, and he searched among us, found one worthy among us in that Georgia-born black man named Elijah Muhammad, and we thank the two of them for not leaving us comfortless, but giving us a leader, a teacher, a guide, a brother, and a true friend, their Messiah, our Jesus, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. Welcome once again, brothers, sisters, guests, and friends, to another edition of My Walk with Jesus as a Muslim. We have an absolutely timely subject for you this afternoon with a special guest, one of our sisters, a citizen of her nation, your nation, called the Nation of Islam, which simply means a nation entire submission to do the will of God. We'll be talking about disaster preparedness. And you may say, well, what is that about? Disaster preparedness comes right in time as we commemorate the 27th anniversary of the Million Man March Holy Day of Atonement that was held in 1995 in Washington, D.C. at the Capitol, where almost 2 million men showed up at the call of God that was made through the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, his voice, his mouthpiece, his trumpet. And as we looked at the commemoration celebrations both Saturday and today, it is clear that everything Minister Farrakhan uttered from the mouth of God through his ears, these disasters, these storms are happening all over the country and all over the world with increasing intensity and destruction of property and loss of life. With that said, let's hear from first the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, and right after he is presented in these clips, we will bring on our special guest, the one, the only, Sister Taquela Muhammad.
That what we see going on in the world, that we will try our best to be prepared. You need to store some water in your homes. You need to store some food in your homes, groceries that will allow you to be in your homes for 2 to 3 weeks or 2 to 3 months. But when that great earthquake comes, it won't make any difference what you have in your pantry. It's very sad. And I hoped and prayed that I would not have to see that. But it is coming. And I pray that America will recognize that black folk are nothing for you to play with.
Assalamu alaikum. And now we present to you and introduce to others the one, the only, Sister Taquela Muhammad.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Most Merciful, I bear witness that there is no God but Allah, and I bear witness that Muhammad is his messenger. I greet you all again in the greeting words of peace and paradise. He said in the Arabic language of Assalamu alaikum and Happy Holiday of Atonement.
Wa alaikum salam. Happy Holiday of Atonement to you.
Praise be to Allah.
Yes, ma'am. Could you tell us a little bit about why you focused your attention on something as ominous, something as, in the minds of most people, a subject you don't even want to discuss because of the loss of property and life many times? Why did you choose that as a something to become somewhat of an expert in, if there is such a thing? Why did you choose that as a path in order to help your people see what's coming at them, not only in America, but all over the world?
Praise it due to Allah. Yes, sir. Well, it actually began with me as a child listening to the words of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. As a child, I was 7 years old, and I read the book, The Theology of Time. And at 7 years old, it literally scared me to death. Like it, I was so afraid, yet I was very intrigued. And, you know, we were taught in that book and in Fall of America, the things that we should have. My mom, I think it was the year Y2K or year 2000, when everybody thought that the world was going to end, 1999 or something like that. And my mom had so much stuff in her basement. Like if it was a Y2K, I believe that we would have survived at that time. And I knew that she wanted to make sure that we were as prepared as possible. Nothing happened. And then over the years, you know, everybody got lax with, you know, stocking and storing, but the disasters did not cease. And I started doing research and looking at the fact that us as Black people were always in the worst condition when it comes to disaster preparedness and recovery, higher death rates, because we were the most that were unprepared. And so over time, Hurricane Katrina hit, and I was like, okay, now it's really time. You know, we have to pull off the words of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan in the lectures that you just presented, as well as in our books by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, The Fall of America. And again, we as Black people were the ones that were not prepared. We suffered the most, you know, when Hurricane Katrina hit and our people were in the dome and, you know, they just complained about simple things like not having water and, you know, not being able to have their medication for those who were diabetics, and just simple things that some of them had to leave their homes just because they didn't have the basic necessities. So I felt like a lot kept pushing me toward that area and to making sure, first and foremost, that me and my family, me having children as well, were prepared. And then, you know, knowing that I'm prepared, I'm like, oh, I can't look at my family and my friends and they're not prepared. So I started to teach and preach to them in 2010, and it became history. I just wanted to get us all to at least have just the basics in our home. So I started having workshops in like 2012 and all the way up until now, just having little workshops and, you know, speaking on the fundamentals of preparedness, taking FEMA training courses and classes. And I just been intrigued watching documentaries and just so many different things that kept pulling me into that direction. And I just felt like this is the time. So all praise is due to Allah.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Sir. Brother Stephen, do you have any questions for our sister before we bring on any of our guests in the chat?
See, let me get me on here. All right, no questions as of yet, but I guess, I mean, if I had to ask a question, as a people, disaster preparedness and really stocking our food is not something that we do. We've kind of been very domesticated as a people, and so we really are dependent on government. What would you say to our people who think that government will be there, FEMA will be there for them when disaster strikes?
Yes, sir. I would say first and foremost, look back at the last few disasters and see how much help the government gave to our people, particularly Hurricane Katrina. We suffer so much. And right now, as we see now with COVID as well, resources ran out. You know, we didn't even have basic necessities such as toilet paper when COVID hit. And so that should be a reminder to us that we need to have these things in our homes, because the government can't even help themselves when it comes to the types of disasters and the magnitude of some of these recent disasters that we're having. The governments and the simple states are declaring state of emergencies right now because they don't have the resources to be able to take care of their citizens in that city.
They all go through FEMA, and FEMA is the one that takes charge in that sense.
When it comes to money, generally, how much does FEMA have to spend on these type of disaster-related events, particularly hurricanes, on the broad side?
Yeah, it can be you know, billions of dollars per event. You know, in 2017, when we saw it was, I think, three major hurricanes in a row. You know, Congress had to keep appropriating more emergency funds. It got up to tens of billions of dollars that they had to appropriate. Generally, there's a reserve fund for FEMA that they can tap into when they need it, but then occasionally that gets drained down and Congress needs to give them more money when things are really serious.
So, we have to look at that. And so it's going to be every man for himself at that time. You can have $1 million in your bank account, but if the stores are not there, if there's no stores because they got demolished by an earthquake or a hurricane, or you go in a store and the store shut down, or there's just no goods in the store, how can you get what you need to get at that time? So money is not the value. It's making sure you have these items in your home.
I think, sister, that you're spot on, because if I remember correctly, when Hurricane Ian hit, those blacks that lived, I believe it was Pine Island or Pine Valley Island, they were cut off, and they said no aid really came to them. It was long after the storm had passed. They were just getting through to them to rescue any of them. So you're correct. Most of the time, black people are in the worst places geographically, cut off from all outside aid and help. And as you said in Katrina, when white folks were getting bread and food for their places, they were called surviving. When we did it, we were called thieves. Mm-hmm. And then they got on the bridge, wouldn't even let them get out of the danger area in Katrina. Mm-hmm. And you know, Minister Farrakhan did a personal tour of that area and videotaped it to show what was going on there. And he did the same thing in providing water purification machines. I believe it was $100,000 a pop, mm-hmm. or something like that, three or four of them over there in Haiti, to give them pure drinking water. So we have to begin to prepare, my sister, as you said, non-perishable foods. There are dry foods and water that we can store. Some of them will last up to 5 years if not activated. So I think you're absolutely correct. We need to store up, as our grandparents used to, at least in my day, all of them had pantries, but we've gotten away from that because, as Brother Stephen pointed out, we've become so dependent and so gullible to believe that the same government that put us in this condition with lead pipes in Flint and other places across the country somehow have our best interest at heart, when their history shows they have never, ever had our best interest at heart at all on anything that affects human life.
Absolutely. Praise
yes, ma'am. Yes, what else have you experienced, sister, as you've gone around the country and been on many platforms? What kind of either opposition and or questions, or is it said that we are so, for lack of a better word, illiterate when it comes to disaster preparedness? And I have found this to be true even on this program. When you bring certain people on a program and you use words like expert, you use words like doctor, you use words like mathematician, because our people are afraid of these terms and embarrassing themselves in terms of they don't know what to ask. What can you say to help us let our people know you don't have to be a scholar, you don't have to hold a doctorate degree? And if we are ignorant of it, it's not necessarily our fault per se, it's because we've never had nobody have to love us enough to take the initiative to go out and get the information and then be willing to follow the principle of Kwanzaa, each one teach one. How can you help us to help our people to not be afraid to seek out why they should be disaster prepared?
All praises due to Allah. Beautiful. So first I would say, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan said in his book, Closing the Gap, to just always be a student, always be able to receive information. And that's the biggest thing. And that's my motto. You know, I don't consider myself an expert. I never put expert on anything when it comes to disaster preparedness. I just feel like that's the purpose that Allah created for me, to help our people. You know, we all have our avenues of how we can and what we can do to help our people. So it's just about studying a subject, researching it, and finding the facts of it and putting it out to our people. Because like you mentioned, some of our people are just, they're just lazy and they just don't want to do the work. So they want someone to do it for them. And so you're always going to have someone that's willing to do the work for everyone else. And so that's how I look at it. When it comes to some of the opposition, The first thing, like you said, is when it comes to disaster preparedness, it's like you're preaching doom. You know, our people are so busy being distracted and living the life and wanting to party and have fun and, you know, for better words, get high in this time. We really don't want to hear about the doom. We do not want to hear about judgment. We don't want to hear about revelations. We don't want to hear about the ending days. You know, even when our grandparents talked about it, we tried to brush it off as children because it puts a little fear and anxiety in us. You know, I had a sister approach me and she was like, you know, she said, you scared me to death. Like, you know, when you would talk about it, she said, I would just go out and start getting things because I was scared. And for me, I don't want, like the minister said, he doesn't teach this to teach doom. He just wants us to be prepared. And so when it comes to disaster preparedness, it's not something that you should be afraid of. You should be afraid when you're unprepared. That's when you should be afraid. If you're preparing yourself, you only can do the best that you can. And that means go out and get something. You know, I've had to assess individuals' homes. They invited me to their homes because they needed help with, you know, how to store their items or making sure they had enough or just little things like that. And I've been to a few homes where they didn't even have but a few gallons of water. And some didn't have any water. They were like, oh, I have refrigerated water. Or, oh, I have faucet water. And I always be like, you don't have water? Like, you can't do any, like, and I would say, do you know how much water you really need? Like, we don't know what we need until we don't have the resource. Like, we use it for cleaning, we need it for cooking, we need it for sanitation, sanitizing. You know, you have to take a bath or at least wash up and just drinking water. And so you can't survive without having that. And I tell them all the time, but because we feel like water is always going to be readily available, we just put it off until tomorrow. And that's the biggest thing. We keep putting it off and putting it off and putting it off. And now we're experiencing not only the stores being empty and the shelves being empty, but something called, the minister called it hyperinflation, where the prices are quadruple now compared to where they were. These are the highest rates ever. So, you know, you got a bottle of water back in the day, it could have been a dollar. Now you're paying $5 and $6 for a bottle of water. It doesn't matter the brand name, it's still a bottle of water. Right. And so if you don't jump on getting the things, the price is going up, but also the product is getting smaller. And so what you can afford today and what the price is today is not tomorrow's price. It's going to go up. Yes, sir.
And so some of the, what we're looking at when you talk about the food inflation, right, is people are not recognizing that the extreme weather is also affecting the productivity of the crop. Then you have the coronavirus, which is limiting the people who would help to harvest the crop. They are not either in the field or they're not in the factory because of the distancing and just catching the virus. And so if there is food, like you're saying, if there is food on the shelf, and we've seen this summer where the shelves were bare, but if there is food on the shelf, like you're saying, that the food, as inflation continues to rise, it will be so expensive that we may not even be able to purchase the food that's on the shelf.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's correct. That's and correct. A lot of it is not even real food. It's genetically modified is what you can get. And not only will you not be able to afford the food, but now the packaging is smaller. So you're getting less. So if you have a family of four, you know, products used to come in pack, you know, size quantities of 8 or 6. Now they're coming in 3s. So if you have a family of 4, you can't purchase just one pack of, say, salmon burgers. You can't purchase one pack when there's 3 in there. Now you have to purchase 2 packs where you get 6 of them, but now you're paying triple the price because now you have to get an extra box and the price went up in general. So this is what we're looking at.
So what are some of the first steps if I'm a novice? You know, what are some of the first steps for me to begin to prepare for myself or for my family?
Yes, sir. So in my book, I said the first thing is to assess your family and to see, you know, what you all eat, you know, how often you eat. Because if you're not eating like, you know, what we're taught in the Nation of Islam, we're taught that we eat 1 meal a day. So you can assess that to say each person has 30 meals. But if you're not eating 1 meal a day, then you have to prepare for however many meals you eat in a day and how much nutrition that you may need. That's first and foremost, how much water, how much food. Then you need to come up with a disaster kit in your home, an area designated to disaster preparedness items that is not your regular pantry or your regular kitchen items, but somewhere else in the home where you can store these things and continue to stock and build these items. You also want to have evacuations and practice these things. I know when I did a FEMA training, they were saying that it was a child at one time during a fire, and the child ran into a closet and hid in a closet because of the fire. And that child, of course, was found deceased because the parents never talked about fire, and they never had an evacuation to even see what is the first thought that the child would have. And so that child's thinking, okay, I'm hiding from the fire, but they didn't know that they would burn. They didn't have the thought to run out the door. And sometimes we automatically think people know what to do. And even us, we don't know what to do. So we all should, you know, practice, you know, having these drills. When there's a fire, what do you do? Just assess your family. And then, you know, once a month or once every couple of months, have these evacuations and have these disaster planning trips for you and your family. Go out camping, turn off all the lights and see how everyone does. Do they know where the flashlights are located? Do they know how to, you know, find downstairs with all the lights out? You know, just different things that you and your family can do. Get CPR first aid certified so that you know what to do in the case of an emergency, because we were taught that they're not coming for us at that time. So you want to prepare for that. I mean, there's an array of different things that, you know, you can start out, but I would start out with those as the first basics.
How much water and how much food should an individual look to store, and for how long?
Let's give her a number though. Let's say you got a family of six, two parents, four children. What should the water preparedness be for a family to eat three meals a day? For a family of six.
Eat three meals a day. Yeah. So of course, when it comes to survival, you're going to have to think minimal. The average amount of water that it says for a person is 1 gallon per person per day. That's average, because you have to think about loss of water. If something happens, you have to think about, you know, drinking, again, sanitation, cooking, all these different things. That's the bare minimum. And I know that seems like a lot of water, because it is. But that is just bare minimum. So like the minister said, at least 2 weeks, but he said 2 weeks or 3 to 6 months. So I always push everybody to have at least 6 months worth of items in your home. That's a lot of water for that family. If you have, would you say two parents?
Six. Two parents and four children. That's six people in the household.
That's 180 gallons of water. So
yes, ma'am.
Yes, a lot of water, but that you got to find a way to try to store that, but that's bare minimum. And so I tell individuals to get those big blue 5 gallon jugs of water and try to stock those in areas in your home. You can do cases as well, because the cases of water are equal to 2.5 gallons of water. And so you can do that as well. But if you feel like that's too much water, the minimum would be half of that. And that's 90 gallons some way, somehow you need to have in your house in emergency. But you should also rotate that water, not just have it sitting in one spot. Try to rotate it out so you're using the freshest water and just continue to stock as well. The same with the food. You know, we're taught to can, and that's self-canning. And you should have assess what your family eats according to their appetite, and have jarred food for that. And they may be able to eat one jar a day, but if you want to stock enough for three meals a day for your family, that's going to be a lot of water and a lot of food for your family. So we have to do bare minimum.
That's the
only reason why I raise the three meals a day, because even though we are Muslims, we have a certain way we are taught, but you still have even Muslims that have health issues. And when they take medication, then they can't just eat one meal a day, because they got to take food with that medication. And so it would be better to err on the high side.
Yes.
And then if you miss it, then you'll be overly prepared for the one meal a day person.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's always best in every aspect of disaster preparedness to be overly prepared than to not be prepared. But I know that when COVID hit and we were teaching and pushing for individuals and families to get things in their houses, they were like, oh, a lot of my stuff expired. And I had to say that you didn't rotate it, or you did not go into your food and, you know, check the dates and give it out. Okay, yes, ma'am. Thank you. And so whenever it comes to your food, if you don't use it, give it away. You can take it, check those dates, and I would take mine and I'll donate it to like the homeless or go to a shelter and I'll give it to them and then I'll just get more food. But if you're not rotating your food, then you will lose that food.
So yes, we know from the background that that's why we put on there mompreneur.
Always.
Because no matter what you do,
I'm always in mommy mode.
Your children will find a way. They will find a way.
And that's, we had all this right talk before I got on the show. So.
But it never fails though.
You know, with that, with children, that gives a good segue into the next question. As far as preparing the children, how mm-hmm. what are some of the steps? And I know that you had just said about doing some drills, but what are some of the steps that we can do to prepare our children for disaster or an emergency where we may have to evacuate?
Yes, sir. All praise due to Allah. So again, as I mentioned earlier, having evacuations and also movies, and I'm not saying like crazy stuff that they have out now. I'm talking about like documentaries and things about it, just to kind of see what your children think of these things. I have my children watch documentaries, and I have them watch even about like doctors and being able to see blood, you know, how they feel about that. I ask them questions about death. Like, what do you think about death? What do you think if you saw someone dying? You know, how do you feel about, you know, if we didn't have any food or water, what would you do? Just to kind of assess their minds. Also have like hands-on things. Like, we went camping one time and it was an experience. Like, and I'm not saying camping to like live your best life. We literally went camping on the basis of survival. So we only took what we could carry, and we did not use our vehicles. We just had to be out in our tents it was an area designated for camping for security purposes, but it was still a lot. And you had experienced the raccoons, you had experienced bugs, and this was the summer. It was so hot. It also started to rain, you know, and being out there, like using the portable stove, having to go to the bathroom, just these different things that the children had to see. They really did not like it, but they adapted to it at that moment. They just knew, okay, we can't use anything else. They was able to adapt to it. So doing that, reading books to them, you know, and preparing them mentally, physically, and spiritually. They should be working out. They should be walking, you know, for periods at a time so that they don't get lax. Because during that time, you may have to evacuate. You may have to walk just a mile. And there's children that don't even want to walk up and down their driveway. You know, because now we're in that time of electronics and TVs and things like that, that children don't want to do anything else but sit in the house. So you got to get them out. You got to get them exercise. You got to get them into that having to walk. Have them, like, we went to Stone Mountain as well here in Atlanta, Georgia. And that's a mountain that you can climb up to the top. And I had my children to climb that mountain with their backpacks so that they can see how it is. And I mean, they were complaining about the heat and how tired they was. And I'm like, we're going to have to make it to the top, you know? And so that these different things offer exercises for them so that they can be at least a little bit prepared for it. I mean, there's no real way to really truly be prepared like you want until you actually are in the midst of an actual disaster.
So there's a number of questions from what you just said. Number one is how important is it? And Student Minister Darnell touched on, I guess, when we're talking about people who may have some ailments, but how important is it for us to be in shape as we go into these dark times?
Yes, sir. All praise due to Allah. So the Honorable Elijah Muhammad in Message of the Black Man have taught us time and time again, and How to Eat to Live, on how we should eat, what we should have stored in our home, and just different things that we should do by exercising and, you know, having these basic ailments within ourselves so that we can be ready for this time when it comes. He's not telling us to do this, you know, for nothing. And so the first thing is fasting, because that helps you to be able to stretch those days out. You know, he told us we should be able to eat once a week. And it's not that right now we have to, but it may be a time where you have to. You don't have a choice. And if you haven't practiced being able to do that now, when that time comes, you won't be able to do it. And that also helps us to heal a lot of ailments within our body and our blood. And so a lot of us, the reason why we're dealing with a lot of these ailments, because we're not eating properly, you know, and we're not exercising, we're not taking care of ourselves properly, and we have to deal with these ailments. And so a lot of it starts with the fasting, and then it starts with getting a little exercise, at least 30 minutes in a day. He said the best exercise for you is walking. So a lot of us have to get out and walk up and down the street just to get some exercise. We can do chair exercises as well, where you're lifting, you know, even a water bottle. You can lift water bottles, gallons of water within a chair, you know, just different things to get you acclimated to that. But you have to know that if there's a time that you have to evacuate, are you going to be able to, you know, get to the gym, get you some believers or sisters or brothers in your community together where you all can work together on, you know, making sure you're healthy and fit. So that's what, that would be the basis of that.
And I'm sorry, Student Minister Donnell, I got so many questions, you know what I mean?
Brother, please, you want to okay. make sure that the sister, if you have them, I mean, and as I yes. think of things, I'll come with it, but if you got them right now, fire away. Sister's like, she's biting at the bit. She, come on with it.
Ready to go. Ready to go.
What are you doing? You didn't bring me on there not to ask me no questions. Come on with it.
So, you know, the thing about being in shape is that we may have to evacuate our homes. We see a lot of times where, you know, people are flooded out, tornadoes, anything could cause us a derailment of a train, leaking, you know, poisonous gas, anything could cause us to have to leave our home. Can you explain to us a to-go bag, and what should we have in our to-go bag?
Yes, sir. Praise be to Allah. So a go bag is basically, I would say, a backpack that you use to carry in the case of an emergency. I would have a minimum of 3 days. A backpack is for survival purposes only. And I have to say that because a lot of times we have all these ideas of the things that we should put in our backpack for comfort, but not necessarily for survival. So the backpack is used for you to basically get to point A and point B. So if you're leaving your house and you have 10 minutes to get ready, you should be able to have that backpack where you have the basics, where if you can't get back home or you need to survive outside for 3 days, you have that until you get to your next destination. So some of the items you want to have, first and foremost, the backpack should be a waterproof backpack if possible. It doesn't have to be fully waterproof, but one that, you know, it's not going to get drenched if you're out in the rain. And your items inside will still be safe. You also want to have a bare minimum of 3 days worth of water, 3 days worth of food. You want to have some type of shelter. So how I look at it is food, clothing, and shelter. You want to have some type of shelter. So if that's a little makeshift tent, you can put a tarp in your bag, poncho. You want to have a change of clothes. And I always recommend like a t-shirt and some jogging pants if you're able to. And I would take the t-shirt, the jogging pants, your underwear, and a pair of socks, and I will roll it up together and stick that in there. You could do that with two things. You want to have a hygiene kit in there. You want to have a first aid kit. And you want to have some miscellaneous, like your paperwork, like documents as far as your driver's license or passport or social security cards, your children's information. Maybe some candy, maybe a compass, a map. I mean, I have a list that I can send out as well. And again, some of those items are in my disaster preparedness ebook. But you want to assess the basic things that you need, and then you can add whatever you want to add into that bag. But you always remember that you have to carry this bag. So you do not want to overload the bag because you want to have all these things in there and then realize that you have to carry this for 20 miles. And that's a long time walking somewhere with a very heavy bag that's weighing you down. So when it comes to survival, it should be the bare minimum of what you need to get to and from your destination.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. So now that we have that to-go bag, and let me get this book out of my face here. Here we go. Sorry about that. So how important is it for us to know what are, you know, some of the threats that are in our environment that are in our community. So for instance, here in Dayton, we have Wright-Patt Air Force Base. Mm-hmm. And many people might not even think about Wright-Patt as being a threat, but because it's a major base, that means that it's a target for, you know, bombs to fall, for any terrorist attack, anything like that. We also have where, you know, this area experienced flooding, where in 1913, I believe that most of the city was underwater. So how important is it for us to know some of these threats that are in our community?
Yes, sir, it's very important. Again, in the time that we're living in, some of them are just sporadic things that we don't expect to happen, you know, to us. So, and there's really no way to be prepared for every disaster, but you should look in your county. You can go to your government website. You can go to Google and type in the disasters in your particular area and just assess that. If you're in an area where there's water, then you know you're prone to floods, hurricanes, tsunamis. So you want to make sure that you also have the type of insurance to cover your home and different things like that. If in the case of that, if you're prone to tornadoes, you want to make sure you have certain items like wood, tarps. You want to make sure that you have the scotch tape to put on, you know, your windows and doors to prepare your home. You want to do evacuations based off of a tornado. You know, what your children should do if you have a basement. What do you do? Do you have food store down there? Do you have a home that you can go to? Do you know how to get out of the city within a 50-mile radius? Do you have a family member or friend's home that you can go to if you were told to evacuate your home? And so you should always be looking to be prepared. Make sure your car is prepared with a survival kit, as well as no less than half a tank of gas. Because even during that time of any disaster, if you're told to evacuate, the first thing that gets full is the gas station. And it'll be really sad if you're able to evacuate, you have your go bag and you're able to leave out of that city, but you don't have gas in your vehicle. So you want to make sure that you have that. And then just also assess the areas of how to leave and the highways and the back roads of leaving your city. And one of the things you want to get is a map of your area, because again, in certain times during these disasters, the cell phone towers are down, people are not getting signals. And so a lot of people are going to be stagnant and stuck because they don't know how to even leave and evacuate out of their city. And so that'll help you out and your family to have that map so that you're able to get to and from your destination. So just assess that area and just look at other potential disasters that have happened within the last, I would say 100 years. Just check any disaster that's happened within the last 100 years, because we're not exempt from any disasters in this day and time. Even though we don't live in a flood zone, we know that water can still get to us. We know that we're not used to tornadoes in this area, but that's when it really will hit you, when you're not used to that, and then you get hit by a tornado. And just like Florida, of course, some of them are used to hurricanes. And a lot of people during this last Hurricane Ian stayed because they're like, oh, we get hurricanes all the time. But they misread the multitude of this particular hurricane. A lot of them said, well, I haven't experienced it in 20 years. But then a lot of them lost their homes and their lives because they didn't evacuate when they were told to.
And the thing is that when we're looking at weather today, we're looking at extreme weather. We're not looking at weather that we were looking at 10, 20 years ago. Absolutely. Because of all the moisture that's in the air. A lot of people don't really understand how in the Arctic, a lot of that ice is melted. And so there's a lot of moisture in the air. And then you combine that with the warmth. And so it's, pretty bad. You know, go ahead.
No, I was just going to simply say that the thing is that again, as we talk about, none of this is an accident. We know that the government line, climate change, global warming, and all of those terms are basically to distract us from the real origin and originator and the causer of these disasters. And we know, we are taught in our lessons, that all of the above is caused by the Son of Man.
Absolutely.
This is not a Mother Nature thing where she gets angry, some white woman gets angry because you trick her with margarine as opposed to butter. This is not some mythical creature. This is not some carbon emission and ozone layer opening, even though those things may be happening as a result of what the God is doing. But the bottom line is, Brother Stephen, exactly what you said 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 100 years ago, there's nothing on record to compare. As right. they said, it's almost 500 years what Ian just did.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
And, you know, that's a perfect segue, if we can, to play this 2-minute clip. Because as we know, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan has been warning us for years. He's yes. been saying, and you can go on Twitter and use the hashtag watch the weather. And mm-hmm. we will see that a lot of the members Absolutely. Of the Nation of Islam have been, you know, using that hashtag. But let me play this clip and we'll get right back into it.
When they say final call, that means plane is about to go, train is about to go. If you don't get on, then it's too late. It leaves you. Don't you ever think that the final call is something that goes on forever. America, right now as I speak, is under divine judgment and chastisement. And this thing is not going to ease up. The earthquake you had on the West Coast, these things are going to get worse. Snow, freezing cold, terrific heat, and then famine. Now they're trying to do everything they can to fix the economy. That economy, I don't think, is going to be fixed. So if you put all your trust in this, then you are in for a great surprise. There'll be some lean years. And as this weather begins to beat the land that produces your food, the price of food will skyrocket. Can you imagine the deceit of telling you about a tax cut? And yours is already spent with the increase in your gas price, your electric price, the gas at the pump. It's getting more and more difficult to live in America, in our condition. So if we don't unite and do something for ourselves, it's going to be a pretty bad day for us.
Yes, Man. Sir. Yes, sir. Beautiful. Yes, sir. Anybody else try to get in?
Yes. I do have a question that's let me find it real quick. And while I'm looking for that question, the minister was talking about uniting. How important is it for us to have a garden in our home? And how important is it for the community to have a community garden?
All praise is due to Allah. That should be at the top of the list. Definitely have a garden. Because right now, again, as we were talking earlier, the prices of food is going up. And again, what we're paying for in the stores isn't even real food. We're paying high price for genetically modified GMO, sugar, high fructose corn syrup, pork byproducts. That's what we're actually paying for. That's what we're eating. And that's making us sick. And so the first thing is being able to grow in our gardens. And not only that, but being able to harvest and being able to put those same items up into our survival kit. And therefore, our rate of survival will go up because we are getting food that have a nutritional value versus what we're getting in the store that we deem as survival foods. And so having a community garden as well, because again, you can't be fully prepared and stocked up in your home and not think that your neighbors and community will not come for you. Right. And so to have that garden that assures that your community is prepared. And then if you teach each other how to garden, and everybody has an item, then now you have a bartering system where, for example, if I have tomatoes, but my neighbor has cucumbers, and then the neighbor down the street, she has you know, butternut squash. Now you all have a system where you all can barter from one another and be able to survive as a community. And therefore, you know, you push down the limit of them coming to you trying to take what you have. You know, you're preparing them as well. So,
and I see a lot of churches have a lot of land, and it's unbelievable, but that they don't have a garden on all of that land. They're cutting all that grass, and they got, you know, some of them still have some young people in the church that they could use and teach them how to go into the soil and, you know, raise some food. There's a sister from a question from Sister Sandra, and we know that nuclear war is being talked about more and more, and she's asking about iodine pills. We are hearing so much about nuclear war. What is your understanding on that?
Iodine pills, definitely. Again, that gets to the next level of survival outside of just the basics, with water purification tablets and iodine pills. And iodine helps to keep some of that radiation down. And so I would say it would not hurt to have some in your home for your families or inside your go bag, because we are living in that time. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad, I believe, and I don't want to say he said it, because I know he did, but I don't know where to reference it. But I remember him mentioning iodine pills as well as gas masks. And there was an older survival book where he was telling us certain things that we should have in our house that circulated around. And again, I don't want to quote it for sure because I don't have it actually in front of me. But that was something that I read on the list to have. And so make sure you do get those iodine pills for the radiation, and just study, you know, how much to take. You know, you can separate some in like the little Ziploc bags and put them in your children's bags as well, and put them with the mask as well. So yeah, I will get those.
Okay, excellent. Winter is coming. The gas bill is starting to get pretty high. And I know that winter might be a real rough month. And as we see gas going up because of the war, what can we do to winterize our home and get our home prepared?
Praise be to Allah. That is a wonderful question. So in that same survival book, we were taught to have, you know, plastic for our windows. And so that's the main thing. I used to do that every year in the winter, where I would get plastic and tape it up to the windows, or either use a staple gun and staple like the thick plastic onto the windows to keep in the heat. So you definitely want to get that. Again, scotch tape is your best friend. You can use that for a multitude of things. You definitely want to have plywood. We're taught to have big things of plywood to cover windows, because you don't want it to be the dead of winter and something happens where your window gets broke or cracked, and then you got all this cold coming in. So you definitely want to have pieces of plywood that you can, you know, drill up to your windows. You want to have a kerosene heater, but you want to look up the hazards of kerosene. You want to look up the hazards of any heat source or any type heaters, because some of them can cause carbon monoxide poisoning. And with that kerosene heater, you want to make sure that you also have a carbon monoxide monitor. And some of them are battery operated, so you can put them directly next to, you know, your heat source to make sure that you and your family are safe. If you have a chimney, you want to make sure you have wood. Wood is going up. Right. And again, a lot of us think in our mind it's fairy tale. We think we're going to be able to go outside and just grab some wood. I tried that one time and I was just like, oh, and it was like when I needed sticks, I could not find any sticks. Like I was looking all through my yard, like, where are the sticks? And so if you don't already have some wood or trees already cut down and collected, it's going to take a lot for you to wait until the dead of winter and have to try to go out and try to cut down some wood just so you can put it in your fire. So you
and can I say something to that too? Is that you really almost have to get it like a year in advance, because it has to dry out. So if you try to burn it while it's still moist, it's going to cause, like you said, you may find where your home is filled with smoke. So you're absolutely right. And, you know, if we're using our fireplace, we definitely want to make sure it's clean, because if we burn that fire and it's not clean, then we're going to catch the house on fire as well.
Absolutely.
And one last thing about the wood too, bringing wood in from outside, make sure that there's no little critters in there, no little you know, because there will be in the wood as well, you know, seeking that
absolutely
more.
Absolutely. And for me, I take the lazy approach, but I go buy my wood. And I know some people's like, I'm not buying it. I mean, and then you can go to local farms, because some of the farms, they will have wood that they're giving away or that they're selling to you. So don't not look at that. Like local farms, they're also with things like that. So if you can get it from a farm, do that. If not, and you don't have the ability, don't just say, well, I'm not going to get it. Just go ahead and get you some wood that you can purchase from like Walmart or Kroger or something like that, that you can already have, you know, in your home.
And, you know, once again, you talk about the dangers of the kerosene. Mm-hmm. And they do have some kerosenes now that you can burn inside, but you still have to be careful. But we hear every year about people dying, not just because of kerosene, but also because of running generators, because mm-hmm. we may have power outages this year because the infrastructure, they never put any money into it. Mm-hmm. And the grid is so antiquated that it you know, it just takes a little bit of ice on those power lines to bring them down.
Absolutely. And it's a brother named Brother Ralph from Power X Generators. And so I got my generator from him. And it was really awesome when we had a power outage one time. And again, that one didn't use any oils or gas or anything. It's just purely made. I don't even know how he made it. He's an electrician, so he built it by hand. So, you know, I would recommend that. But if you can get one that doesn't use any type of oil or burn a lot, do that. But like you said, just have different backup sources when it comes to the kerosene, because a lot of people, they have that heater and they go to sleep and they have their blanket so close to it that it does cause fire. So make sure that you all are safe.
I'll tell you one other thing, my sister, that would be a good investment to look into. I have right now in my own home what is called a whole house generator.
Mm-hmm.
So if the power is knocked out, it operates right off your natural gas line.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever the power goes out within 1 to 3 seconds, your home is fully powered again without any loss of food,
right,
comfort, heat, or air in the summertime.
Yes.
So that's something to look at too.
Absolutely.
House generator. It sits on the outside of your house, so you ain't got to worry about no carbon monoxide coming back into your house. All of that.
Yes,
but
it will run
the whole house.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, I've heard about those as well. But then they also have some that are solar powered as well. And so you want to think about investing in those as well, because, you know, if you can't, if that one, you know, the whole house one, how long does that last?
It lasts as long as it lasts 40 days, 50 days.
Okay.
No matter.
Yeah.
Because it's operating only off of your natural gas.
Absolutely.
And all of that's underground, so they don't usually get damaged.
Right, right. Yes,
it's
sir.
The power, so it's the electricity that always goes out.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes, sir. So, yeah, I would invest in one of those. And also, again, look into the solar power ones as well, because you just set those outside during the daytime. And then at night you have, you know, electricity in the house. And I know I've used one, and people was coming over to my house because they thought the lights were back on. And I'm like, it's not, you know.
Right.
So, and I will also say dark curtains or sheets to cover your windows, so that if the power is not out in anyone else's home, you don't want them to be able to come to your home and see what you have.
Oh, understood.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
So let's, when we talk about storing, you know, what is it called? Well, storing, right? But when we talk about those who are special needs, right?
Mm-hmm.
That we talk about the elderly, or we talk about someone who may have a situation where they need medication, and they may need to stock up on that. How would you advise them to go about doing that? Because I know that some pharmacies are real, they're real, I don't know, shaky
Hold on one moment though. During COVID though, my own pharmacy supplied 3 months worth of automatic renewal of all of your prescriptions during the COVID crisis, when we all were sheltered in place. So all you have to do is get with your doctor and make sure that your doctor let him know what your needs are.
Mm-hmm.
And then you want to put in place a minimum of a 3-month renewal every time. Now, of course, if a natural disaster occurs and the pharmacy's wiped out,
there you go. That's what I was thinking. Right. So that's what I was going to say. That helps. Like if it's something that is foreseeable, so we know that something's going on and we're able to get to the pharmacy, what Student Minister Donnell said. But I would also say to ask them and just tell them that you are, you know, building your survival kit because, you know, things are unknown right now. And ask them if you can have a 30-day supply of, you know, your medication that
you they'll can give it to you. They'll give it
yeah, they'll give it to you when you tell them that. And you can go ahead and put it in your bag. And because I know one sister was telling me one time, she's like, oh, just tell them to skip their medication. I'm like, everybody can't skip their medication. Some of them have serious, you know,
you have side effects.
Yeah, they cannot skip their medication, even if it's for survival. So I would say you have to at least until you're able to put that 30-day supply in your bag and then try to use it before the expiration date and then ask for another supplies to make sure that, you know, you're not, you know, letting it expire and then not able to use it at all. So that would be the best advice, because if you don't get that, like the brother said, if everything shuts down, that's it for you at that point. You're not able to get it. And that has happened to a lot of people. So kind of research.
And they've died. Yes, right.
Yeah, they have died from that. And they've had serious complications from not being able to get their medication in time. So I would assess and see if they can give you that. And if they can't give you 30 days, some of them should be able to give you like a minimum of at least 2 weeks. And that's if you got 2 weeks, you should be able to be okay until you can get somewhere within that 2 week time frame.
So if I can, I would like to play another clip by the minister. And then if we can, I know we're at the bottom of the hour. So I just have two more questions on my end. And then if there's any more from the people. So we'll play this clip.
So what is America facing? Well, let me paint a picture for you by the grace of God. It is written that America is going to suffer the worst famine that has ever been seen. And this is what Jesus prophesied. There would be earthquakes in diverse places. There would be famine. There would be pestilence. Nation would rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom. That's happening as we speak. If 29 states are under drought and you are not producing in the grain producing states what you did produce at one time when you could feed all of America and feed the world that is hungry, not today. The crash that's coming will make the crash in 1929 look like nursery school. What will happen to the people when they can't buy goods, when they're hungry? What happens to a man that is in an airplane crash and lives are lost and there's no way to eat? Did not that human being carve up the human that died and ate a human in order to stay alive? You cannot tell a people, thou shalt not steal, when there's nothing for them to eat, for the law of survival takes over. Well, when they are so dissatisfied with their government as they are, you have armed your people to destroy their own government and people. You too will have to fight your own people.
Man. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Man.
I love that. The time of what must be done. I was going to read that.
So, how important is it for us to learn first aid? And how important is it for to learn some form of self-defense?
Yes, sir. Praise be to Allah. It's very important. It's between life and death. Like the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan said, when people are hungry and we haven't experienced severe famine like it's been prophesied that we would experience. And people are coming to wherever they can get food and be able to survive. And so we are taught in the Nation of Islam not to carry weapons. And because we're taught not to carry weapons, we need to have some form of self-defense. We should be able to at least take somebody down, even if it's long enough for us to run away and get away to safety, because we don't want to lose our life. So we must have some form where we go and get some martial arts training. We do some, you know, again, working out, exercising to be physically fit and have some type of endurance at the time. What was the first part of that question?
First aid.
First aid, yeah, that as well. Definitely go to the Red Cross and be able to take some first aid training classes. Be certified in CPR and first aid. I mean, a disaster may happen and you may get through it with your family, but then you may see your child choking or your relative choking and you don't even know how to do basic CPR. And you think that you're going to call 911 and they're going to come, and they're not during a disaster. And so we should be able to have just the basics, and then we can feed off of that. We can also watch lots of videos. They have YouTube University where you're able to learn so much, you know, from just watching videos and then practicing it even with your family to make sure that you all know exactly what to do during that time. So it's definitely imperative for you to have that first aid and martial arts training.
All right. All right. Well, I think, you know, we are at the bottom of the hour, Snoop Minister. I think we've, you know, gotten a lot out of our sister today.
Oh, ain't no question.
And hopefully
we... And she was very thorough in her answers. They were succinct. Yes. They were not complicated. In other words, it was not difficult. Mm-hmm. For anyone, and that is the most, that is, these are, what she just did is an example of how all of us must share this revelation. It is very profound. It is absolutely heavy. But if you only want to try to be heavy from an intellectual to impress somebody with your knowledge, then you do a disservice to your people. And that's why all of the messenger's writings were only at basically a seventh grade level, because his teaching was so plain that it would be hard for a fool to error. So nobody has an excuse when you explain, as the sister just got through explaining, this disaster prepared, nothing complicated, simple things. And so this gives a person a way to see, I can do that. Is that all this dude? Okay, I can do that. I can do that. As opposed to trying to sound like we, you know, and put it out there in a way where nobody can really relate. So thank you, sister, for following the example of your teacher and the teacher of our Messiah, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. Thank you for that brilliant, but yet simplistic, fundamental presentation. We need to have your course periodically again and again as we get move closer and closer to these ultimate disasters, that if the minister said it, the messenger said it, the God taught it, then that means that they, about if it's going to happen, it's just
right.
When.
Absolutely.
Just, yes, sir.
And so and, with that... I'm sorry, go ahead.
I just wanted to allow her to tell us about how we can get her book and the process that you went through. If you could just tell us a little bit about that process, because I know pushing out a book is something that is, it can be very difficult. So can you tell us how to purchase your book?
Yes, sir. Praise be to Allah. So it is available on Amazon. And I do have a Shopify account as well, where I have the ebook available, but the actual book will be available sometime within the next week or two on my website. I prefer everybody go to my website, because we all know that Amazon is going to take a piece of that percentage, and you don't really get that much profit you know, when you promote on someone else's platform. And so, but I do want you all to get in. Again, it's like you said, it's very simplistic. It doesn't have like a whole bunch of stuff where you just get so overwhelmed. And I didn't want to put this first book out where it is overwhelmed. Now I'm working on another one that's going to have, you know, more pictures and more in depth, because disaster preparedness is so broad. But the first one, I just wanted to put it out, just simple things that they can just put in their home, and, you know, you can take it with you. And if you're out and you see some things in the book that you want to get, you know, you just want to read over it, you'll have it, as well as the ebook on your phone. You could just look it up and say, okay, since, you know, I'm at Home Depot, let me grab this. Or, you know, I'm at the grocery store, let me get that. I just wanted to make it very simple and plain for, again, our people to be able to get and understand and just have some tangible item in their home when it comes to disaster preparedness.
Yes, ma'am. Right.
Right.
And I also want to recommend, I'm sorry, the movie Aftershock I was mentioning earlier. It is it was about some survivalists that they survived a 7.8 magnitude earthquake. But they were talking about, just from different perspectives of the people that survived in Nepal, you know, as well as I think Mount Everest, and how many people died. I think it was 22. Yes, yeah, 22 deaths and 61 people injured. But it just happened out the blue, and everybody's account of that time was just so deep of what everybody felt and thought, how they felt even about God. Like a lot of them were talking about how they felt about God taking lives and how He took good people, and just, you know, they never thought that they would experience something like this. And I think that we should all tune into this, as well as allow our family and children to watch it, because it just gives you a firsthand look at what happens during an earthquake and then after. And so definitely check that out.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, sister.
Thank you, my sister. Thank you.
Praise be to Allah. Thank you both.
All right. If you want, I guess I'll close this on out, Brother Minister. And
please do.
All right. So thank you, brothers and sisters, for watching. Please share this program with your family, your friends, your associates. This is very serious.
America is under divine judgment as we speak. Elijah Muhammad taught us 50, 60 years ago of what we were going to face. And he said there would be four great judgments. Rain, unusual rain. Yes, sir. Snow, unusual snow. Earthquakes, hail. And that he would use the forces of nature against America. What you see going on in Charleston and in South Carolina is very serious. They have never seen rain like that at all. How? Why? That's divine judgment. When I leave you today, the calamities are going to get stronger, because God wants America to let us go, not integrate us. Let us go and give us a good send-off. Those of you who are scripturally sound, Moses was not an integrationist. And neither are we. Let me be clear. America has no future for you or for me. She can't make a future for herself, much less a future for us. The scripture says, come out of her, my people.
Greetings to you, sisters and brothers. This is Steve Muhammad coming to you from Refuge
Depot. As we all know, the weather is extreme. We need to prepare our homes to become a sanctuary and not a cemetery. Please go to refugedepot.com or click in the description below to find all your disaster preparedness items and survival techniques. That's refugedepot.com or click in the description below. If you have any questions, please call 937-985-0779 or email refugedepot@gmail.com.
Greetings. Dear listeners, we have been blessed by Almighty God Allah over the 90 years of our work in the Nation of Islam and lifting our people up from the miserable condition in which we find ourselves. We ask your support of our effort, and we hope that you will be generous and make a contribution to the work of the Nation of Islam and the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan by clicking the button below or go to noi.org/donate. We thank you in advance for your support. May Allah God continue to bless you and your families. Assalamu alaikum.
Now you can get the same uncompromising truth you've come to expect from the Final Call newspaper on all your connected devices. Subscribe to the Final Call Digital Edition today. Go to subscribe.finalcalldigital.com.